titled as The Hellish Planets. So we are reading text 12. So actually we are going to read from text 12, 13, 14 and 15. Text 12 has a very small purport. 13 and 14 no purport, and then 15 has a bigger purport. So these are prose verses. So I will just read and the translation, and then the 15th verse we will read the word by word meaning as well. Evam eva maharauro yatra nipitam purusham kravyadanama ruruvastam kravyena gatayantiya kevalam dehambaraha. Translation: punishment in the hell called Maharaura is compulsory for a person who maintains his own body by hurting others. In this hell, ruru animals known as kravyada torment him and eat his flesh. Purport: by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It's a small purport. The animalistic person who lives simply in the bodily concept of life is not excused. He is put into the hell known as Maharaurava and attacked by ruru animals known as kravyadas. Text 13. Yatvihava ugrapashun pakshinova pranata uparandyati tam apakarunam purushadir api vigarhitam amrita yamunacharaha kumbi pake tapta taile uparandayanti. Translation: for the maintenance of their bodies and satisfaction of their tongues, cruel persons cook poor animals and birds alive. Such persons are condemned even by man-eaters. In their next lives, they are carried by the Yamadutas to the hell known as Kumbhipaka, where they are cooked in boiling oil. Text 14. Yastviha Brahma Drukha Sa Kala Sutra Samyake Narake Ayuta Yojana Parimandale Tamaramaye Taptakale Upar Adashtat Agnya Arkabhyam Atitapyamane Biniveshitaha Shut Pipa Sadhyam Cha Dakhyamanantur Bahi Sarira Aste Sheta Cheshtate Avishtati Paridavati Cha Yavanti Pashuromani Tavad Varsha Sagashrani. The killer of a Brahmana is put into the hell known as Kala Sutra, which has a circumference of 80,000 miles and which is made entirely of copper, heated from below by fire and from above by the scorching sun. The copper surface of this planet is extremely hot. Thus, the murderer of a Brahmana suffers from being burned both internally and externally. Internally, he is burning with hunger and thirst, and externally, he is burning from the scorching heat of the sun and the fire beneath the copper surface. Therefore, he sometimes lies down, sometimes sits, sometimes stands up, and sometimes runs here and there. He must suffer in this way for many thousands of years, as there are hairs on the body of an animal. Text 15. Yastvihavai nija veda padat anapadya apagataha pakandam chopagadastam अशीपत्रवणं प्रवेश्य कषाय प्रहन्ति तत्र हसौ इतस्ततो दावमान उभयतो दारस्थल वन वनाशिपत्रैश्चिद्यामन सर्वाङ्गौ हतो स्मृति परमाय वेदनाय मूर्छितपादपादे निपतति स्वधर्माः पकण्डुगणतं फलम्भुङ्क्ते. वर्ड् बै वर्ड् मीनिङ्ग् ऐ विल् रिपीट् य एनि वन् हू तु बट् इह इन् दिस् लैफ् वै इण्डीड् निजवेद पातत् फ्रम् हिस् ओन् पात् रेकमेण्डेड् बै द वेदास् अनापदि ईवन् विथौट् एन् एमर्जेन्सि अपगतः डीवियेटेड् पाखण्डं ए कन्काक्टेड् एथियिस्टिक् सिस्टम् च अण्ड् उपागतः गान् टु तं हिम् अशीपत्रवणं द हेल् नोन् एस् अशीपत्रवण प्रवेश्य मेकिङ्ग् एण्टर् कषाय वित् विप् प्रहरन्ति दे बीट् तत्र देर् ह सर्टन्लि असौ दट् इतः ततः हियर् अण्ड् देर् धावमानः रनिङ्ग् उभयतः आन् बोत् सैड्स् डारैः बै द एड्जस् तालवन अशिपत्रैः बै द स्वर्ड् लैक् लीव्स् आफ् पाम् ट्रीस् छिद्यमान बीयिङ्ग् कट् सर्व अङ्गः हूस् एण्टैर् बाडी हा अलास् हतः किल्ड् अस्मि अयम् इति दस् प्रमया वित् सिवियर् वेदनय पेन् मूर्छितः फेण्टेड् पदे पदे अट् एव्रि स्टेप् निपतति फाल्स् डौन् स्वधर्मः द किल्लर् आफ् हिस् ओन् प्रिन्सिपल्स् आफ् रिलिजन् पाखण्ड अनुगतं फलं द रिसल्ट् आफ् अक्सेप्टिङ्ग् एन् एथीस्टिक् पात् भुङ्क्ते हि सफर्स् ट्रान्स्लेशन् इफ् अ पर्सन् डीवियेट्स् फ्रम् द पात् आफ् द वेदास् इन् द आब्सेन्स् आफ् एन् एमर्जेन्सि द सर्वेण्ट्स् आफ् यमराजा put him into the hell called Asipatravana, where they beat him with whips. When he runs hither and thither, fleeing from the extreme pain, on all sides he runs into palm trees with leaves like sharpened swords. Thus injured all over his body and fainting at every step, he cries out, "Oh, what should I do now? How shall I be saved?" This is how one suffers who deviates from the accepted religious principles. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. There is actually only one religious principle. The dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. The only religious principle is to follow the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unfortunately, especially in this age of Kali, everyone is an atheist. People do not even believe in God. What to speak of following His words? The word Nijaveda Pata can also mean one's own set of religious principles. Formerly, there was only one Veda Pata or set of religious principles. Now, there are many. It doesn't matter which set of religious principle one follows. The only injunction is that he must follow them strictly. An atheist or Nastika is one who does not believe in the Vedas. However, even if one takes up to a different system of religion, according to this verse, he must follow the religious principles he has accepted. Whether one is a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Christian, he should follow his own religious principles. However, if one concocts his own religious path within his mind, or known as, in his mind, or if one follows no religious principles at all, he is punished in the hell known as Asipatravana. In other words, a human being must follow some religious principles. If he does not follow any religious principles, he is no better than an animal. As Kali Yuga advances, people are becoming godless and taking up so-called secularism. They do not know the punishment awaiting them in Asipatravana, as described in this verse. Om ajnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya shakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha namo om vishnu padaya krishna prashtaya bhutale shrimate bhakti vedanta swaminiti namine namaste sharashvadi deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarine jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಸೊ ದಿಸ್ ವರ್ಸಸ್ ಆರ್ ಕಮಿಂಗ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ. ಸೊ ಒನ್ ಮೈಟ್ ವಂಡರ್, ಏನೋ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಇಸ್ you know, transcendental literature. It talks only the activities of the Supreme Lord and his devotees and their interaction, their loving exchange. Such a exalted scripture, Grantha Raj, why is describing these things in a very ghostly manner? One might think, why? If you see the context of these verses, they are coming, the fifth canto is considered to be the navel of the lotus, navel of the Supreme Lord. The first two cantos are the lotus feet of the Lord. The third and fourth cantos are the thighs of the Lord. And the fifth canto is considered to be navel of the Lord. This fifth canto, the first part, contains the description and activities of Privartha Maharaj and his descendants. Actually, Sukadeva Goswami continues the description of the descendants of Swayambhu Manu. And the second part contains the description of the planetary systems. So the context why, after describing the activities of Priyavrata Maharaj, right, one might wonder why all of a sudden the context switches to the description of the planetary systems. Because the first part of it is considered to be Visarga, or secondary creation, the descendants of Swayambhu Manu and their activities and progeny and all of them. Because in the end of that section, it is mentioned that how Bharat Maharaja, right, he actually divided the Bhumandala into 9 islands. And then given to 9 of his sons. He describes that. In that context, because he is talking about dividing the earth, Buloka, into these 9 divisions. And in that context, Parikshit Maharaj asking, oh, you talked about dividing the earth into 9 islands. So then why don't you also describe the how the whole structure of the universe is? So in that context, so first, Sukadeva Goswami describes the horizontal description of the planetary systems. How the different dvipas are there, surrounded by different oceans. And how different these islands are inhabited by different personalities. And how all of them are offering prayers in the glorification of the Supreme Lord. Then he describes the vertical description of the planetary system. So there are 14 planetary systems, right, are also categorized as three planetary systems, right, upper, middle and lower are in detail the 14 planetary systems, Bhuloka, Bhorloka, like that it is going up to all the way to Brahmaloka, and then lower planetary system all the way up to Patala Loka he describes. After describing this, and then also he describes the glories of Anantadev, where how Anantadev is holding the entire planetary system on his head, like without any effort, how like a mustard seed is like so small and insignificant. If we have to hold a mustard seed, is there any effort required? No. So like that, Anantadev is holding the entire planetary system, you know, in a simple way, without any effort. After describing Anantadev, then he describes the hellish region. So in that, actually he says that hellish region is situated that below the Patala Loka and above the Garbhadaka ocean. The space between the Patala Loka and the Garbhadaka ocean is where the hellish planets are situated. These hellish planets, he describes the great learned scholars, number as 21 or sometimes as 28. After saying that, he describes this 28 hellish planets with their names. After giving their names in the early part of the verses, right? I think verse 7, he gives the all the names of the hellish planets, and then later verse by each planet, each hellish planet, he describes the characteristics, the activities there, and who qualifies to enter there, right? The descriptions are given. So in this context of describing the planetary system, to complete, he also describes the hellish planets. This section of the Bhagavadam, or the 10 topics of Bhagavadam, is called Sthanam, or description of the planetary system of the universe. So in that context he gives. Here in this verse, the first verse we saw today, so we saw four hells. I think earlier three hells have been already described, right? So what are the hells? Tamishra, Anta Tamishra, and the 11th verse talks about Raurava, right? So Raurava is given that if envious person commits violent acts against many other living entities, right, after his death, then he is taken to the hell by Yamaraja. Those living entities who were hurt by him appear as animals called Rurus to inflict very severe pain upon him. So in that purport, Prabhupada actually says that, or actually Jiva Goswami mentions in the Krama Sandarbha, this animals called Rurus, right, we don't get to see in this earthly planet. It's not there. But it is there in only the hellish planets. What they do, they attack the human being and then they eat the flesh of that personality who has been going through the punishment. So in this today's verse, Maharavarava, right, if you see that Raurava is certain amount of punishment. If somebody goes beyond that means actually he is actually more in Tamoguna. The punishment is more deeper. Actually, when Parikshit Maharaj asks in the chapter, why there are so many divisions in the planetary systems, why there are so many varieties are there? So Sukadeva Goswami mentions that based on people's faith influenced by different modes of sattvaguna, rajaguna, tamoguna, they end up in different destination. People predominantly influenced by sattvaguna, they experience happiness and then they go end up in higher planets. People who are influenced by rajoguna, they are engaged. The people influenced by sattvaguna, they actually they engage predominantly in the dharmic activities. Activities which are prescribed. So people who are influenced by rajoguna, they are sometimes engaging in dharmic activities, sometimes they are engaged in adharmic activities. Because people who are influenced by rajoguna, their focus is sense gratification. Whatever it interests them, whatever it enables them to further extend their sense gratification, they will do that. Sometimes in that process, they might engage in dharmic activity. Sometimes they will engage in adharmic activity. And this type of people, they will experience both happiness and suffering. The third category of people who are predominantly influenced by tamoguna, they don't know religious principles at all. They never engage in dharmic activity. They will engage only in adharmic activity. And those are the people who are sent to this hellish planets. Also, this people who are engaged in adharmic activity, depending on the amount of tamoguna influence on that person, he might engage in different levels of adharmic activity. Based on the level of that adharmic activity or tamoguna influence, they will end up in different types of hellish planets. So causing, you know, pain to other living entity, he will end up in Ravarava. Causing more pain because he is influenced by tamoguna. Here specifically it mentioned that a person who maintains his livelihood just by causing pain to other living entities. If we look at predominantly in Kali Yuga, we are all engaged in that only Ugra Karma. Ugra Karma means the activities when it's performed, the reactions are not ordinary, extremely violent reaction. That's what Ugra Karma means. Predominantly the whole world is engaged in Ugra Karma activity. So the description here is given is that those people predominantly they are interested only in their livelihood. They don't bother how other living entities are affected by my activity. So those people end up here in this Maharaurava. Further on this, causing pain to other living entities, more cruel is because they are not able to control their tongue. To sustain their life, they kill animals. Here it's mentioned that they kill them. They put them in fire alive. So means that the animal have not exhausted its lifespan. Before its lifespan is over, even though nowadays people might say that I'm killing and then only eating. What it means here is alive means their lifespan is not exhausted. Right? When an animal or any living entity, before its lifespan is finished, it can't progress in its spiritual evolution. Prabhupada actually mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that what is the definition of ahimsa? Ahimsa means not interfering in the progress of a living entity in its spiritual evolution. That's called ahimsa. Generally, people think that ahimsa means not causing pain to others. What is that? This means actually a living entity is in its spiritual journey, right? It's mentioned in Padma Purana, Navaja, Jalaja Navalakshani, Stavara Lakshya Vimshati, Kramayo Rutra Sankayaga, Bakshinam Dasalakshanam, right? Trimshani Lakshani Pashavaha, Chadur Lakshani Manavaha. There are 9 lakh species of Jalaja, aquatics. And then there are 20 lakh species of immovables, Stavara Laksha Vimshati. Kramayo Rudra Sankayaga, there are 11 lakh species of insects and reptiles. Bakshinam Dashalakshanam, 10 lakh species of birds. And Trimshal Lakshani Pashavaka, 30 lakh species of four-legged animals. And then 4 lakh species of human beings. So, Padma Purana gives this description. So, a living entity starting from aquatics, it is on its journey of evolution of the consciousness. So, the Vedic scripture also talks about evolution, unlike the modern science evolution. Modern science evolution says that now different bodies are evolved, bodies evolving from lower species to higher species. But the Vedic literature tells that, no, there are fixed number of bodies. How many bodies are there? 8.4 million types of bodies are there already. It's fixed. The soul, by its consciousness, it's evolving. So this is the difference. The evolutionary theory of the Vedas or Vedic literature is that the soul is evolving through this consciousness. When it's on a journey, every species of life has fixed duration of life. Before its natural course of life is finished, if it's interrupted for one's own selfish purpose, in this example, this verse tells about people kill the animals for satisfying their tongues. Before the lifespan is finished, if they are killed, they can't progress in their spiritual journey. So people who are engaged in that type of activity of killing animals for satisfying their own tongues, that's why it said animals which are alive, their lifespan is not over. Prabhupada mentions, you know, if you have to eat meat, at least, yes, eating meat is not good, it will induce tamoguna, but if you can't control, at least eat it after the animal is dead. Because otherwise they will end up here in this Kumbhipaka hell. What is their activity? What will happen to them? When the animals are killed and cooked and eaten, they will end up in this Kumbhipaka hell. What will happen to them there is they will be also roasted in the oil. They will be also fried. So the scriptures are mentioning these activities because here Sukadeva Goswami is mentioning these activities as part of the description of the hell, because as part of the description of the various planetary systems, people end up here in these hellish planets because of the tamoguna. So Bhagavatam is teaching this. If you read these verses, actually what is our first response? What do you get? What do you feel? At least when I read this verse, immediately I feel, oh, what and all, you know, harm I had caused to other living entities, I think about it. Or sometimes when we read it, we think, oh, I should be very careful in not committing this type of sins or activities. But later, after this chapter is over, we will see the response of Parikshit Maharaj. After hearing the description of the hellish planets, Parikshit Maharaj is not worried about him going to the hell. He is not afraid at all. What he responds is, how one can be saved to go to these hellish planets? How one can be liberated from these hellish planets? This is the consciousness of a Vaishnava. That is why these descriptions are given here. After describing, Parikshit Maharaj's response is that it's not that he is worried about going to the hellish planets. He is actually worried about how living entities can be stopped going to these hellish planets. How even the planet, living entities who are already suffering in the hellish planets, how they can be liberated. That's his thought process. That is the consciousness of a Vaishnava. Right? So in that context, we can understand why all these things are given. Of course, it is also caution given for us that how we should be careful. Also here, the context here in Parikshit Maharaj conversation, it is coming here because to glorify Parikshit Maharaj, what his response is after hearing this. He is not afraid of going to all these hellish planets. He is actually worried about the living entities going there. So that is what a devotee's consciousness should be. How we can help others. How we engage in upakar to other living entities. To help them. Upakar means helping. The different type of helps people provide. Right? Vedas also describes different type of punya activities. But of all these upakars, there is something called paro upakar. What is the paro upakar? How we can help that living entity going through the cycle of birth and death. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Because the actual problem for the living entities is not food, cloth, medicine. All of them, maybe they are required. But they are all actually temporary needs. The real benefit, the real upakar, the supreme upakar, paro upakar one can do to the living entities is helping them to understand who they are, helping them to surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. That's what comes in the 12th, the 15th verse, right? That the connection we can see, right? People who are engaged in killing other living entities are causing harm to other living entities, killing other living entities, and then the higher than that is killing a brahmana. Higher than killing the other species of life is killing a brahmana. Why? Because brahmana is considered to be the head of the society. When a head is cut off, will we get any direction? Will we be able to progress anywhere? No, we can't. So that is why killing of a brahmana is described here as the highest type of sin one can perform, causing injury to other living entities. Of all the different types of injuries one can cause to the living entities, killing a brahmana is the highest. So those type of people end up here in this hellish planet, right? Called Kala Sutra. So why all these people are causing all this injury to other living entities? Because they really don't know religious principles. So that is why in the next verse, it is mentioned, one who deviates from the path of Vedas. What is the path of Vedas? The path of Vedas is mainly by following the Varnashrama Dharma. Right? Varna and Ashrama. Based on one's nature and work, one's Varna is described or decided. And then based on the stage in which one is situated in life, whether it's a Brahmachari or a Grahastha or a Vanaprastha or a Sannyasi, different types of duties are prescribed. So one has to follow these prescribed duties according to one's Varna and Ashrama, according to one's psychophysical nature and the stage in which the life he is situated. One has to follow this Varna Ashrama. That is the only way one can stop going to hellish planets. That is what actually the path of Dharma is. This the Yamadutas know. Later we will see in the 6th canto, the beginning of the 6th canto, Ajamila's pastime is described, right? That the Yamadutas, when they come to catch Ajamila and take him to hellish planets because of the sins he had committed, they are stopped by Vishnu Dutas. In fact, they are defeated by the Vishnu Dutas. They are completely bewildered because they know that he had committed so much sin. And they know the path of Vedas. They know the path of Vedas. They know that these people have violated the Vedic principles. And hence, he should be punished. So that's what the duty of a Yamadutas are the servants of Yamaraj. Servants of Yamaraj, they might be ghastly looking, but they are very knowledgeable. They know the knowledge of the Vedas. But the path, the thing they did not know is they know the religion which propagates dharma artha kama moksha, but they do not know the transcendental religion, the religion of the Bhagavatam. They did not know. Hence they go to Yamaraj and then they ask this question. There are different types of judges are in this world. Of that supreme, we thought it's you. Ultimate judge is you. Why? We have been defeated by somebody else. How is this possible? You are the supreme judge, supreme authority on deciding what is dharma, adharma and giving punishment to people. And we are your servant, empowered by you. And we have been defeated by somebody. How can there be somebody who is superior to you? At that time, Yamaraj mentions to his servants and followers, he tells that, no, I am not the supreme. Beyond me and all the devatas, there is the supreme Lord. And what he propounds, what he gives, the instruction, that is the dharma. That is the verse Prabhupada quotes in this verse, in the 15th chapter, in the 15th text, right? In the purport, Prabhupada actually quotes this verse. Dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. So this verse actually is coming from in the later 6th canto, 3rd chapter, 19th verse. In that actually is Yamaraj is quoting this verse. Real religious principles is given by the Supreme Lord. What is that real religious principles? Even the great sages and demigods don't know. Then who knows? Only the 12 Mahajanas. Right? Starting from Brahma, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, right? Janaka, Bhishmo, Prahlada, right? And then Balir, Bali Maharaj, Vyasakir, and then Sukadeva Goswami and Vayam, myself. Only we 12 know the real religious principle. What is the real religious principle he mentions? That is actually the path of Bhagavata Dharma, which is the path of surrendering to the Supreme Lord. So that is the real religious principle. That's what Prabhupada is quoting here. But Prabhupada is very kind. You know, here further he is telling, even if somebody does not accept the path of the Vedas, actually the topmost religious principle is surrendering to the Supreme Lord, according to this instruction given in Bhagavad Gita. Right? Sarvadharman Parityaja. Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. That is the topmost religious principle. By surrendering to him and serving him. The path of surrender. The next level of religious principles are given in the Vedas, which is based on Varnashrama Dharma. Even if one deviates or one does not accept the Vedic religious principles, at least one should follow something. What if they don't follow Vedas, especially in Kali Yuga, there are many. Originally, Prabhupada is quoting in the purport that originally there is only one religious principle based on Vedas. As the Kali Yuga progressed, many other religions had come up. So Prabhupada is very kind here. He is saying that even if somebody is rejecting Vedas, right, if somebody accepted some other religion, they should follow it sincerely. So we can see that, you know, Prabhupada's conversation in the Science of Self-Realization with Father Emmanuel, right? He talks about, you know, this killing of the animals. Jesus Christ actually talked about, you know, love for others. And if you are a real follower of the Jesus Christ, you should not kill other animals. Thou shalt not murder. Thou shalt not kill. People actually say that thou shalt not murder. Thou shalt not kill means it includes all living entity. Thou shalt not murder means only other human beings you should not kill. No, thou shalt not kill. No other living entity should be killed. Like the Prabhupada actually gives that flexibility. So later, in the other book, The Journey of Self-Discovery, Prabhupada actually talks about this principle of Dharma, Bhagavata Dharma. Let me read that part. So that way we can understand so that we should not feel that, oh, I am following Hindu Dharma, I am superior, and somebody is not following Hindu Dharma, somebody is following some other Dharma, they are not superior. One should not have that feeling at all. Prabhupada actually quotes. In the journey of self-discovery, I'm just reading. It's in the topic is given as making friends with the mind. In the fifth chapter, the topic comes under the section making friends with the mind. In that later, Prabhupada writes, the Bhagavatam does not mention that Hindu religion is first class, or the Christian religion is first class, or the Mogavanian religion is first class, or some other religion is first class. The Bhagavatam says that that religion is first class which helps one advance in devotional service and love of God. That's all. That is the definition of a first class religion. We do not analyze that one religion is first class or that another religion is last class. Of course, there are three qualities in the material world: goodness, passion and ignorance. And religious conceptions are created according to these qualities. But the purpose of religion is to understand God and learn to how to love God. Any religious system, if it teaches one how to love God, is first class. Otherwise, it is useless. One may prosecute his religious principles very rigidly and very nicely. But if his love of God is nil, if his love of matter is simply enhanced, then his religion is no religion. Actually, this is the essence. Right? Deviating from the path of Vedas means not just the Vedic path of Varnashrama Dharma. Even if somebody is following any religion, if they are sincerely following, they are okay. Prabhupada says they will make some advancement, they will progress, because they are willing to follow some authority. But if somebody is taking it and concocting it, twisting it for their own, to suit their own agenda, so that is punishable offense. So nowadays, no? People, it's a fashion. People say that, oh, I'm spiritual, but not religious. Right? They don't know what they're talking. Right? They don't know what they're talking. They say, I'm spiritual, but not religious. So religion and spirituality, they are together only. Right? Religion gives an avenue to practice spirituality. Right? Prabhupada says, right? Philosophy without religion is mental speculation, which is very dry. Religion without philosophy is fanaticism. So both of them, philosophy and religion, has to be hand in hand. Philosophy gives the knowledge, and then religion gives the avenue to practice that knowledge. They need to be together. Bhagavatam, that's why Bhagavatam teaches both philosophy and religion, the practice. So the religion of Bhagavatam is, in the beginning itself we saw, right, in the first canto, second verse, first canto, first chapter, second verse, it's mentioned. What is Bhagavatam is giving? Dharma Projita Kaitavotra. It is rejecting all the materialistic motivated religion. And it is giving the highest. What is good for all? Distinguishing reality from illusion for the benefit of all. That is the Bhagavatam religion. That is the highest. But if somebody cannot follow highest, if somebody is following some religion, as long as that religion is helping them to come to develop some understanding of God and develop some love towards God, they are okay. We should not actually, you know, think that my religion is superior to other religion. Generally, you know, that's the mindset people have, that, oh, my religion is superior to other religion. Now, all religions are useless if they are not arousing the feeling of love of God in the heart. That's what Prabhupada is telling in this journey of self-discovery. So here in this regard, you know, this, what is the ultimate religion Bhagavatam teaches? What is the Bhagavata Dharma? What the Supreme Lord had given? Surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what all the Vedas also teach. Vedas, the Shruti Shastras, as divided into four categories. The four books contain four divisions of knowledge. The first is called Samhita, the prayers to different personalities. And second category is called Brahmana, meaning using those prayers, how to perform ritualistic worship to different personalities. That's called Brahmanas. What is this meaning of this worship and prayers? The esoteric explanation, they are considered to be Aranyakas. They are explained in the third category of the Vedic scriptures, called Aranyaka. And then, the fourth category is called Upanishads. Upanishads are also called Vedanta. Veda means knowledge, Anta means conclusion or end. The conclusion of all this Vedic knowledge is mentioned in Upanishads. And Upanishads helps one to get rid of the materialistic conception of spirituality by rejecting not this, na iti. It rejects all the material things. In the end, if you reject all material, then at least you are in a conception that the spirit is beyond this. Then, after that, removing all the materialistic conception, one can understand spirit and the supreme spirit, the Atma and Paramatma. That is how the Upanishads elevates one in consciousness. To remove all the materialistic conception, it has to reject all the matters. Is the spirit like this matter? No, not this. You like this matter? No, not this. Like that, neti neti, na iti, not this. It rejects and slowly elevates that person to, by exhausting all spiritual, all material conceptions, that person can understand spirituality. That's how Upanishads elevates. Of all the Upanishads, the essence of all the Vedas are there in Upanishads. The essence of all the Upanishads is where? Sarva Upanishad Gavo. If you consider all the Upanishads to be a cow, what is the essence of cow? To get milk. To get milk out of the cow, we need two things. What are the two principles to get the milk out of the cow? You need the calf and the cowherd. Right? Without that milk, we cannot get the milk from the cow. So here, Shankaracharya and the glorification of Bhagavad Gita, in the Gita Mahatmya, he mentions, Sarva Upanishad Gavo, Dokta Gopala Nandana. If you consider all the Upanishads to be a cow, who is the transcendental milkman milking this Upanishads? Krishna, Gopala. Who is the calf? Vatsa is Partha. Arjuna is that calf. So, because Krishna is milking this transcendental Upanishads, what is coming out? Arjuna is drinking this knowledge of Gita. Gita Amritam. The nectar of Bhagavad Gita he is relishing. After Arjuna relishes, the great sages and the great devotees are also relishing Gita Amritam. So, the essence of that Gita Amritam, right? What is the essence of the Gita Amritam? The essence of all the Vedas are in Upanishad. The conclusion of all the Upanishad, the essence of all the Upanishads there in Gita Upanishad. And what is the final concluding instruction after describing all the details of the different yoga system Krishna describes? What is the concluding instruction of Krishna to Arjuna? That is, Sarvadhanman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Right, in the 1865 and 66, this is the concluding instruction of Krishna to Arjuna. Surrender. Surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Acharya has explained the surrender means there are six stages or six steps are there in the process of surrender. Accepting things which are favorable and rejecting things which are unfavorable. So in the beginning stage, we should accept only things which are favorable to the process of surrendering and reject things which are unfavorable. Here we saw in this description of the hellish planets, whatever it is given here, from which we can understand which are things should be rejected. So these are things should be rejected. These are not favorable to the path of surrender. This also needs to be accepted. So this is the connection to this Dharmam tu Shakshat Bhagavat Praneetam. So these verses are coming in Bhagavatam in this context only. Bhagavatam, not even one shloka or not even one word is described extra which is not connected to the Supreme Dharma. One should not actually think that. So other Vedas, other Vedic literature also describes about hellish planets, especially the Garuda Purana describes the hellish planets in detail and the journey of the living entity, right? Later also here, Shukadeva Goswami mentions in the hellish planet regions, it is 28 after describing, is it only 28? Only 28 categories of sins are there in this world? No. Hundreds and thousands of hellish planets are there. So depending on the category of the sin we commit, we will end up in one of the regions. In that same region is a place called Pitruloka. That's where Yamaraj is. Yamaraj is not in the hellish planets. He is in the Pitruloka. In the Pitruloka, all the ancestors, they are offering prayers to the Supreme Lord for the well-being of their family members. So in Pitruloka, the king is Yamaraj. When a living entity, as per the Garuda Purana, when the living entity leaves the body, Yamadutas come and throw that pasha rope and takes the living entity out of the material body and immediately takes them to in front of Yamaraj. See, if they have engaged predominantly in sinful activities, they will enter through the south gate of Yamaloka. And Yamaraj looks very gruesome. He has a big mustache, eyes like reddish and scary looking Yamaraj. To that Yamaraj, the living entity is brought in front and Chitragupta brings the account of all the sins. And then Yamaraj gives the verdict, you are supposed to go to this particular hell and suffer for the purpose of purification. The punishment in the Vedic literature is given not just for the sake of punishment. The punishment, if it's not uplifting and if it's not correcting, the punishment is useless. So the punishment is given to the living entity in this hellish planets so that they can reform themselves, so that they can correct themselves. So after giving the verdict, right, Yamaraj, immediately what happens to the living entity? They are brought back and left where its body is lying down. So after the Yamadutas take the living entity in front of Yamaraj, they bring it back immediately. After the verdict is given, they know where it's going to supposed to go, they bring it back. And then for next 12 days, the first day it is roaming around the dead body. That is why the Vedic scripture mentioned that within the 24 hours, first day itself, the body should be cremated. Because it's attached to the body. And it's crying. Everybody is crying by looking at the dead body. The living entity is crying, telling their relatives, no, don't cry, I am here, I am there, I am here, why are you crying? But it doesn't realize that I am dead. Then, when they start burning the body, then it cries, don't burn, I want my body. The body is burnt, then it's roaming around the house for next 12 days. First it roams around the body for the first day. After the body is burnt, it roams around the house for 12 days. So, according to the Vedic path, the descendants are supposed to actually do different rituals, offering especially food and water till. By offering this food and water, slowly that a body is developed. After the 12th day, the body is fully developed. Then that jiva, through that body, it starts traveling to Yamaloka. So after 12 days of getting this body to travel, then He travels. It takes like 1 year time to reach Yamaloka. In that path, in the process, again, Garuda Purana describes how much difficulty he has to go through. They get beaten up by the Yamadutas with no food, no water. They got to walk through rocks which are like, you know, burning copper. So some preview of the hellish planets they will get in the path itself. And then finally they reach the hellish planets. There actually they go through the punishment. After getting punishment, they get relief. They go to Pitriloka. After going to Pitriloka, under the head of one personality is mentioned, I forgot the name, later it's mentioned. Under his leadership, they all offer prayers to the Supreme Lord for well-being of their descendants, their family members. But if the family members are not grateful to their ancestors and offering food and water to them, right, what will happen? If I am gone out, worked all day in the hot sun, come home, if my family members are not offering food and water, will I be pleasing to them or will I be angry to them? Or normally, if you are thirsty and if you are hungry, you will be agitated. If food and water is not there, if you are suffering by hunger and thirst, natural response will be anger. So when this Pitris, the ancestors, when they suffer in the hell for so long, punishment, and finally they get relief to go and stay in Pitriloka, if the food and water is not offered, that is the, because 1 day of that Pitriloka is equivalent to 1 year for us. Every year when the Shraddha ceremony is not performed, they don't get food and water. They go by hunger. Because of their hunger and thirst, food and water is not offered to the ancestors, they become angry and they curse. That's how, you know, that's the cause of, you know, many sufferings for people in life. Right? The people generally call it as Pitri Dosha. It's because of not offering food and water. Whether they need it or not, it is our duty to offer. By doing that, we'll be protected. Pitri may not be in the hellish planet, they may not be in Pitri Loka, they might be in Sukra Loka, they might be in spiritual world also. It is our duty to offer. By doing that, we'll be protected. Anyway, I'll stop here. It's a very long topic. We can keep on going. So, any comments? I'm little already over by 5 minutes. Any comments? Any questions? Yes, Mataji.
Thank you. What is the difference between religion and spirituality? Difference.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is. It's very simple. Actually, for practical purposes, there is no difference. When we do things without knowledge, right, we simply do rituals. That is religion. When we do it with philosophical foundation, right, when we do it with proper knowledge, that religion becomes spirituality. If you look at God spiritual, the word ritual is already there. If you include knowledge, that ritual becomes spirituality. So it's as simple as that.
If person is spiritual but not a religion?
That means he is just simply mentally speculating.
Illusion.
When we say somebody is spiritual, what does it mean spiritual? I'm spiritual means it's just putting a stamp that I'm spiritual. You have to do some activity, no? If I say that I am a farmer, I can't keep saying that I'm a farmer until I do some farming. Right? If I say I'm a weaver, I need to weave clothes. Similarly, when I say I'm spiritual, I have to engage in some activities which is related to spirituality. What is that activity? That is actually given by different religions. The practice, the philosophy is the knowledge part, the theory. Application is given by the different religions. So one simply saying that I'm spiritual, not religious, that's become a fashion nowadays. Because people are fried out with so-called organized religions, Hence, people want to dissociate themselves with the religion. But actually, without religion, you can't do any practice. Right? Religion means practice. So, I can't say I am spiritual without having any practice. On what basis you practice? It has to be based on some religion. Right? So, that's a hypocrisy to say that I am spiritual but not religious. We can understand why people say that because they are fried out by the so-called organized religions. That doesn't mean you can't throw the baby out of the bathwater. Right? Just because we want to throw the water out of the, after washing the baby, you can't also throw the baby also. Just because there is some deviated religions, that doesn't mean that we should not follow the real religious principle. What is the real religious principle? It's given in the scriptures. So that's like a Western conception to separate out religion and and spirituality, because they are all fried out by this organized religions, and then they want to say that I am spiritual but not religious. But the path of Dharma, Vedic path, actually they are integrated. The theory, the knowledge part comes from the spirituality or philosophy, and practice comes from the religion. Is it okay?
Okay, so that means religion is a spiritual is a under part of religion. That is a part of religion.
So religion, generally people say spirituality means some type of philosophy they have. They have to have some philosophy, right? When I say I'm spiritual, what does it mean? When I say spiritual, I'm spirit, that's a philosophy, right? I'm a soul, that's a philosophy. So that is knowledge part. But to practice, you need some system. The actual system is, there is only one system, that's called Sanatana Dharma. But as Kali Yuga progressed, many other religion popped up. But it's okay, Prabhupada is saying, Prabhupada is very actually liberal and very compassionate. He's saying, okay, it's okay, follow some religion at least. As long as you are sincere. Is it okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Any other comments, Prabhuji? Yes, Mataji.
Just adding to it, I had heard in Braj Mohan Prabhu's lecture, the spirit behind the ritual is spirituality.
Yes.
So one-liner, simple.
Yeah. If we add SP to ritual, it becomes spiritual. Hare Krishna. Thank you for that point here. Please forgive me if I have not spoken anything out of line. I spoke this topic. I am not qualified to speak. By the order of Radha Madan Gopal Prabhu, I was able to speak for my own purification. Give your blessings so that whatever I spoke, I can practice in my life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shila Prabhupada ki, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Nitaya Gaur Premanandi.